Interested in ghosts, UFOs? How about the occult? Are you psychic? Would you like to find out? Well, if you're intrigued by the world's curiosities and all that is paranormal, then Paralore.com is a place for you. Create your own profile, start a photo album, write a blog, or just hang out and watch countless hours worth of paranormal videos while chatting with other Paralore members. Who knows? You could win a prize or two if you're quick and brave enough. It's all here, and it's all free. Visit www.paralore.com and join today. Again, membership is free, and we know you won't be disappointed.
Paralore.com. Unlock your mind.
want to dive into the bizarre world of the paranormal? Do ghosts, UFOs, or the supernatural amaze you to the point of wanting to learn more? Then you need BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. With more than 750 hours of on-demand talk radio, syndicated from more than 35 shows, the Black Vault Radio Network is your one-stop shop for the world of the unexplained. Check us out and tune in 24 hours a day, www.blackvaultradio.com. Again, that's www.blackvaultradio.com.
That band, there was comments being made during the break, and
I'm
having fun with this. That was a band named Sacrilege from the UK. Album Turn Back Trilobite, 1988.
From 1988?
Yeah, they were nice enough to give us permission to use it. And, yeah, everybody was making comments, you know, here in the studio. You know, like, that sounds so 80s. I'm like, well, yeah, it was
80s. Yes, it was.
Good stuff, though. Doug, what...
It was interesting that we were talking about... I haven't mentioned in the first hour when, you know, when we just... Rap, right?
Yeah.
I haven't mentioned
we rap.
Yeah, we rap.
Yo, yo, yo.
No, not that kind of rap. We have a rapper.
I've heard you rap before.
Oh, I have the MP3. You do not want me to play it on Ghostbusters.
Loud out of my mind in Peru, Indiana.
But it was the best.
Sid Haig's sitting next to us, got on the night.
Anyways. When we rap during the first half hour, I mentioned something about, you know, the banks got this you know, huge bailout thing. And then they're spending that money, other than on parties and raises and bonuses and stuff
the good
like that,
stuff.
They're also spending that money on hiring
lobbyists
to lobby the very Congress that gave them the money, which for looser restrictions.
Mm.
How much looser can the restrictions get?
Yeah.
I don't know. But so it's really interesting that I mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
And then our guest tonight is Michael Trudeau of www.colonialresources.com. Many of you may remember him from what it's been like 4 years, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about
Michael. Midas Report, you know, and things like that.
Exactly.
It was really cool to talk to him then. It's even cooler to talk to him
now. Especially now. Michael Trudeau has been an economic advisor and monetary specialist for nearly 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
During those years, Michael has also began a career in talk radio broadcasting under the tutelage of CBS's own Charles Kuralt.
Mm-hmm.
Kuralt has, Michael explains, taught me many things about investigative journalism, but the biggest thing I learned working with Charles was how to talk about complex issues in terms everyone can relate to and understand.
Thank God for that.
We'd
be lost.
Michael began his career as a monetary specialist with one of the largest precious metal firms in the country.
Mm-hmm.
His field of expertise is the coming cashless society, which I see this, and I want to talk about it.
We said expertise. No, this is a solid, tangible thing we're talking about also.
I can
we always had the expert issue here, but we're talking about something a little different here.
Quite different. Michael believes that we are headed for a cashless society perpetrated intentionally, and this is the scary part, perpetrated intentionally by the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government. The website is www.colonialresources.com.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, welcome back to Ghostly Talk.
Man, it sure is good to be back with you guys again. Fun listening to the music, fun listening to the lead-ins and stuff. You guys are awesome.
We have a lot of fun.
Well, that's a compliment.
That will pass before the hour's
over. Yeah. No, that's a compliment coming from you, Michael, because we know how many years you've been in this, so that's a real compliment, so thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
The energy that's coming out of the through the microphone on your end is just phenomenal, guys.
Well, this is important stuff.
This is
important to us. This is things important to every single, not only every single American, but everybody all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the U.S. somehow is still one of them economic leaders. I don't know how, but they haven't flubbed it up enough to, you know, be down at the bottom yet. But this affects everybody all over the world, and There's nothing scarier than when the government is intentionally perpetrating things and they're telling you things are absolutely wonderful and this is how it needs to go, and you know that that behind the scenes there's scheming and there's things going on.
Well, it makes you not want to trust anybody, and that's the reason I've been living in hysterics for the last 10 years, Michael.
Exactly. So we want to know
what's going on. Well, you don't have any option but to, I guess, trust these guys because they're pretty much in charge, so it just comes down to, you know, the realization that we are being, I guess, led astray down a very ugly path, and there's really not too many people who are even so much aware of it. You commented on a couple of things that I want to touch on right off the bat. One is that you made the comment that it affects everybody, and it does, and that's correct globally as well. Mm-hmm. It really affects every single person that there is, most of us, in a negative fashion.
Mm-hmm.
The introduction, when you were talking about one of the things that Charles Kuralt had taught me, and it kind of hit me when you were saying that, was the regards about taking a complex issue but bringing it down to street level.
Mm-hmm.
And the point with that is, if you take just as an example the Federal Reserve, and you bring in and you start to talk with people about, you can go, you know, it depends on how far back you really want to go, but if you start bringing in the Knights Templar and you bring in all the details of Jekyll Island and how these guys got together, you can start to lose people pretty quick. It's interesting if you can bring it down to street level in a real quick snap and just say simply, how many folks know that the Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express?
Uh-huh.
And that's what he meant by bringing it down to the level where you go, huh, what do you mean it's not federal? Well, why would you think it's federal? Well, because the name's federal. Well, Federal Express has the same name. Does the government own them based on those standards? And it comes to the quick realization that, hey, wait a minute, maybe they don't, but sure they do. Of course they do. It's the government.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's not. It's a private for-profit corporation, just like about any other for-profit corporation, save for one major difference, which is it operates here without paying any state or federal taxes.
Oh, wonderful.
I want that option.
Isn't that nice? This company, by the way, is owned by stockholders. Now, I have talked with my brokers for many years to try to get me some of that stock, but so far it's just none of the buys have gone through.
Who the hell owns that stock? That's what I have to ask right now. Who?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to know whose name is on that. Who is a stockholder in the Federal Reserve?
Well, I can tell you right off the bat that most likely the stockholders in the Federal Reserve are guys who own the member banks. So if we go to, like, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds.
Exactly, yeah.
That's your group. And you know, when we look at who it is that's really running the show, it really comes down to the adage of, hey, it's simple as follow the money. And if we've got this gang of thugs who can actually create money at their whim and their discretion and create that, of course, value then associated with it, at that point, it really is up to them, and that's why I said, you know, we're pretty much forced to trust them when we really know that there's no trust at all.
But that's numbing. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, in such power. I mean, the thing is, all these people you see these people in the news who have these powerful jobs with they have money and cars and whatever they want, and then they do something stupid. And then they're finally caught, right?
Yeah, right, and that's just it. You're exactly correct. It comes down to something that's almost ridiculous enough where you sit back and go, you mean to tell me this guy got off with $50 billion and got tripped up because he bought the wrong shoelaces at the wrong store?
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's what that stuff kind of comes down to. I see what your point is, and it's a very good one. Because it seems like with almost zero regulation already, when you can see, you know, Madoff getting away with $50 billion, and they, now, like you pointed out, they're lobbying to relax the regulations, you start to really ask, hey, where are we going with this?
Didn't they already relax the regulations? That's my point. Isn't that the reason why the economy's in the toilet right now as it is? It's because they relaxed them already.
Yeah, at first they say things like, okay, you can loan to people who don't have the income to afford the $500,000 house.
Yeah.
So they do, and then...
And then they wonder why everything's tanking?
So you relax things, and look what happened, and now they're lobbying for more relaxation. I have a feeling that what they mean is in other areas. Like
maybe not with the lenders themselves.
Reporting to the government, what they have to tell the government, what they have to make public, I should say.
Right, and it always comes to me down to a real basic warning that came out many, many years ago, of course, and that was when Thomas Jefferson stood up and said, I fear banks more than I fear standing armies. And he went on to further quote that the reason that he does is because he fears that the people will allow private banks to issue their currency, when in fact it's in the Constitution that says that we really don't do that. We have Congress issue the currency and set its value. And what we did in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act was we allowed these thugs into our country to begin doing it here instead of Congress. So when we did that, this is kind of what we opened up, and this is what Jefferson had made the warning of, is this. He said, if the American people ever allow private banks to issue their currency, and that's what the Federal Reserve is, that first by inflation and then by deflation, and that's exactly what we just witnessed with the influx of currency that hit the markets, the fresh cash infusion that hit all the banks,
yeah,
and then the lowering of interest rates so that those banks would push those loans out and make that interest money. And he warned about that specifically. He said that first by inflation and then by deflation, and of course that's the contraction part. All right.
Mm-hmm.
The banks and corporations that grow up around the people will deprive them of their property until they wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. And, you know, the first time I read that quote, it was really a very powerful statement to me. But what really happened was many years later, after I'd originally found that quote, was the realization of this guy hit a home run right out of the park. Because when we look at what we did exactly that. We allowed the private bank to begin issuing our currency, and of course, since they had the discretion to do so, they could simply pour it in and pull it back out, first inflation and then deflation.
Mm-hmm.
Those banks and corporations that grew up around us, and here we are, AIG, you got Lehman, you got the automakers, you know, this is coming out, the banks and corporations that grew up around us will deprive us of our property. And this is where that contraction comes in, where, oh, you can't afford your house? Get out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it goes back to the bank until we wake up homeless on the continent our fathers conquered, and this is the home run part. Today, less than 1% of the American population can stand up and say they own a home. Less than 1%.
What?
Failed it.
Say that number again?
Yep, it's less than 1%. And a lot of times when I've had talks and been in places where I'm giving group discussions or something, I'll have hands go up immediately, well, I own a house, I own a house, you know, and I'll stop and say, well, let me ask you, you know, what's your mortgage payment real quick, and I'll just spit out a number without thinking. And
yeah,
I'll say, so you don't own your home, the bank does, and
right,
you just showed me that.
Yeah.
And it's immediate when you say it like that that everybody goes, oh, yeah, that's right, I got a bank payment I'm making, so he's right, I don't own a home.
Well, yeah, I mean, we call, I mean, what people
paying on a home.
What people want to say is that, well, it's healthy debt.
And if you think about this, because you made this statement there a minute ago, I think that was Doug that said,
mm-hmm,
we're paying on a home.
Yeah.
Well, you're correct, but think about this for a minute. I'm 47, and I've, you know, been here for a long enough period of time now to go, well, if we're all paying on homes and they've been doing this for 47 years, how come less than 1% have finally gotten the job done?
You know, I find that interesting,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Because I think I can count on one hand the number of people that I know who actually own their home.
Yeah, yeah, same here.
Which is interesting, because I know a lot of people.
It's frightening when you think about it, because then you start to realize who it is that owns these homes, and of course it's the banks. Who owns the banks? The member banks. Who owns the member banks? Federal Reserve and the central banks.
Mm-hmm.
Who owns all this? We're talking about a handful of about 12 families here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one hand I can literally count how many people I know. But, okay, let me ask you this.
Do you get in on this?
Well, hang on.
No, really. I mean, if you want to throw all your morals out to the wind and end up in hell, how do you get in on
let's just ask this question.
Taking advantage of these people, and why?
It's like I said, you know, you can get yourself on the list to buy stock, but so far they haven't called my broker yet.
Well, Michael, let me just ask you this, okay? And, you know, this goes back. We've been discussing this here, you know, lightly on the show and stuff. You know, it's a paranormal show, so. But it comes up. I mean, it's the elephant in the living room, man. You got to discuss it, right?
Yeah.
Paranormal when you think about it, because this thing goes way back. Like I said, you can take this as far back as you want to, and you can get into the discussion from the Knights Templar,
yeah,
and how these guys have passed this secret down, and the Masons and so on, for generation after generation, to a handful, to the next handful, to the next handful, and yet somehow they've managed to keep this pretty much a secret from the globe, outside of the fact that we all stand up and go, wait a minute, I don't own a home.
Yeah, okay, well, my question to you is, like we just said, both of us can count probably on one hand together how many people we know that actually own their home. They own nothing on there, but they still have to pay taxes on it.
Well, yeah, that's
but, you know, but you, no more mortgage payments. You own the place, right?
You have
my
the
question,
deed in your name.
Yeah, my question, though, is, you know, the people I know, one person in particular, he basically went to work every day, worked himself very hard, made his payments, did his job, and made he held up the agreement that he signed on paper, you know, that he agreed to do this, right?
30 years before that.
30 or 15, whatever, it was 15, that he was going to do this. He signed a contract, he honored that contract, paid the money back, and he's good to go now. Now, that's not that complicated, really, when it comes down to it. He didn't get in over his head. He knew what he could afford, and he just made his payments. And
well, also, he did not lose his job during that time. These are different times.
Yeah, you're right.
Didn't it just go over 20% or something? Or
20% as far as unemployment?
No, we're still in single digits. We're still in single digits. We'll be there.
I think it's Michigan. We'll be
there. Well, maybe it was Michigan went over 20%, but I don't know. But whatever it is, there's a lot of people.
Yeah,
were let go. So then, what do you?
You're right.
Unless you did, you know.
Well, here's where the problem is. This isn't. It's a little bit trickier than that. But here's what the easy synopsis of it is. And that is, if you go backwards and you realize that in the last 2 years, you guys' food bill went up about 40%. And if we think about the fact that all of the things that we needed to survive on during that period of time went up probably between 20 and 40%, that means that a greater percentage of our income that we could possibly earn went into paying for those basic necessities to stay alive.
Yeah.
Meant less money for me then at the end of the day to make that mortgage payment. So, of course, then I have to get into a little bit more sketchier loans. And, again, that's where these guys come to get you.
Well, I think that's what 80% of the problem here has been designer financing.
They set that up so that would happen for their gain, of course.
You know, Michael, I've often wondered, what do the banks do with all these houses? I mean, why would you want a house? Why would you want a house that you just threw someone out of? I mean,
because they can then take that money and sell it again, if you will, and put the next guy in it under another mortgage. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of a revolving door is what's going on.
Because
it revolves.
You know, and that's really interesting because I ran into a similar situation. Somebody that I know had a car payment. And the car payment was a ridiculous car payment. The car payment was...
I wonder who this is. Anyway, go ahead.
it turns out what he owed on the vehicle, right, was less than what it was worth. Right.
Sure.
So what happens is, if you happen to, anyway, here in Michigan, I think if you miss two payments, and you, even if you pay them 1 hour late or 1 day late, right,
yeah.
If you miss two payments, the people who gave you the loan for the car have the option to take it away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you look on the paper, and it says, oh, the value of this vehicle is X, and he owes... You know, he owes less than that,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, if we take the car, we get to sue him for what he owes, and
right.
we get to sell the car.
Mm-hmm. And resell the car, correct.
Which is amazing. They get, like, double the money. It's like super bang for the buck.
Well,
someone misses two payments.
And one of the things that's really important of an aspect to look at is that this is, you know, although a lot of this seems to be somewhat paranormal, this is the part that isn't.
Mm-hmm.
When my mom, you know, I think it was probably just before I joined you guys' program the first time, because it was 2005, and she had called me, and we had this conversation, you know, many years back, but we've, you know, she's got interest in knowing that I've got interest in finances. She's got some degrees in psychology, but mine is finance, and so she calls me every once in a while, and she sees something that's of interest financially that she thinks I might have interest, because it gives her an opportunity to call, I think. Probably more than anything, and mm-hmm. chat for a bit. And she called up and said, boy, did you see on Good Morning America that they said that the dollar had dropped 25% in the last 2 years, or had lost 25% in the last 2 years. And I said, no, I didn't catch that. I said, but that sounds about right. I think it's about 12% annual. And she says, yeah, boy, that's pretty bad. And I said, yeah, it is. And it dawned on me, I asked the question, I said, why is that, Mom? And she says, well, 25%, that seems like an awful lot. And I said, yeah, I think so, too. Now, let me ask you again, though, why is it bad? How is it affecting us? How is it bad?
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely dumbfounded was she. And I literally broke it down to, well, do the math in percentages then and figure like this. If our family of five growing up was able to get by on 4 bags of groceries every month, if you bought them correctly or bought them carefully, and it was a $100 bill, so $25 per bag of groceries.
Yeah.
And we're just getting by on that, but we're getting by okay. And then you lose 25% of the buying power of your money in a 2-year period of time, and in just 2 years, you've lost one of the bags of groceries. How's the family of five doing? And what happens if it does it again? And it starts to, you know, and then it starts to really sink in with her about how bad this really has begun. And I said, because it doesn't affect poor people, rich people, bad guys, good guys. This is absolutely unbiased. It affects every single person there is equally in the fact that your dollars, however many you might have of them, now buy you 25% less products or services. And, you know, at that point I said, now I got another question for you, Mom. You mentioned that they said that the dollar had lost 25% of its buying power. I said, where do you think it went? And again, there's just dead air.
Kind of like here.
Yeah. So, do you think we should look in the couch cushions? And, you know, Joel struck a lot of us.
And I think it went into space. Yeah.
She says, okay, Smarty, where is it? And I said, well, I'll tell you. It's not due to cosmic forces of some foreign entity coming into nothing like that, all right? There is no such thing as economic evolution here that's occurring that's making the dollar just erode away. Uh-huh. So it's coming down to an outright 100% theft on purpose. Mm. Period. And that's exactly what you have to come to as a conclusion. And then, from that point, you can step back and say, okay, what can we do about it? I mean, can we stop these guys? Uh-huh. And it was unique for me because not too far back, I think maybe, as a matter of fact, I can tell you exactly when it was. It was November 22nd because it was the anniversary of Kennedy's death.
Mm-hmm.
And it was symbolic because of the Federal Reserve and Kennedy's death coinciding with an executive order that he signed. But there was a group that got together called End the Fed. And they protested. They went to every single Federal Reserve building in the country, one of which happens to be in Minneapolis, which is not far from where I live. And sure enough, here they were for the first time in my lifetime with placards standing up, and the Fed is a fraud, and so on. And it was wonderful to see that because I've been kind of after this fight for a long time, and it's neat to see people standing up in front of that building with actual placards protesting the building for the first time. So that was nice. And there is actually some movements going forward here, so people kind of are starting to get it. And, of course, I think that this meltdown that occurred is really helping because I think what happened here is these guys meant to do this. It just got out of control, and before they knew it, they'd lost control globally, and now they're really struggling to get it back.
That's one thing they've forgotten to talk about. They've talked about bailouts. They've talked about economic stimulus. They've talked about obviously with a new president, we've got a new plan or whatever.
$500 tax refund they're talking about.
Yeah, they've talked about all these different things, but they forgot to talk about looking into the economic system itself, the monetary system itself, starting with the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they don't want to, because if they did that, then they would expose it for what it, I mean, you really only have two options to that. One is you expose it for what it is, or you go in and you say, I'm going to take a really good look at this, kind of like the Warren Commission. And you come back and say, well, we couldn't find anything wrong. And everybody goes, okay, what time's Monday Night Football on? Good, we're good to go. And we all sit back down and go, everything's good again.
Yeah.
And it really isn't. The thing that is so shocking to me is that people just have the group that does know what's going on, the people who really do talk about this, and maybe they may not know exactly how it's happening, but they know there's something happening. They're not willing or not big enough yet to stand up and be audible. You can see every once in a while you'll see this group will put up some newspaper ads or this group will, you know, go and stand in front of the Federal Reserve buildings like they did. But again, some part of a solution is better than nothing as far as I'm concerned, so I like to see it.
Oh, yeah.
It just still seems to me that we've got an awful long way to go, and I'm not sure what kind of a catalyst it's really going to take. So for me, it comes down to individuality. I am looking at this going, hey, man, I'm going to wake up as many people as I can to it and protect myself and my family the best way that I can. Which way is perfect? There isn't a perfect way, so I'll do it the best way again that I can.
Fantastic.
Let's find out.
Well, we've talked about the foundation of this here. When we get into this, we have to take a break.
After the break,
Michael.
Yeah.
But when we get back in, when we come back, yeah, I mean, let's get into the. Let's talk about this cashless society thing. It's just scary.
Yeah, because
it's been scary since we talked to you last time.
And these are the people we just talked about in the half hour who are pushing this forward.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what does it mean to us? We'll find that out. Meanwhile, I want you to go to www.colonialresources.com. Enjoy the independent music on the break, and we'll be right back with Michael Trudeau.
Miss a live broadcast? Feel free to download it direct from the on-demand archives at ghostlytalk.com.
Hey, this is Lena.
And this is Paul with the SEPS Paranormal Podcast. Check us out twice a month where we will be discussing our most recent paranormal investigations here in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
You can find us at www.sepsparanormal.podshow.com or go to our website, sepsparanormal.org.
Or you can subscribe through iTunes. Just type in SEPS Paranormal in the search field. Come by and check us out.
Para X Radio and you.
This is Johnny. Johnny is going to use his computer to contact the spirit. His sister Jenny is very curious and watches. Johnny just typed in www.para-x.com and is now communicating with the dead. You go, Johnny. Jenny is excited because now she can listen to shows like Nightwatch with Todd Sheets, Caps Paranormal Radio with David and Tom, Paranormal Awareness with Bill Metz, Ghostology with Brian and Anna Marie, Leinster Paranormal Radio Show with Danny and Cormac, and the Ghost Divas Live. One day, the world will be a better place when we can all be like Johnny and Jenny and tune into Para X Radio at www.para-x.com. All paranormal, all the time.
When you flashed, I saw what looked like a figure standing in the hall.
Okay, this is Dream Team. We're ready for EVP sweep.
That is weird. These cameras don't do this.
Room. Water supposedly will come off and on in various rooms.
Said our EMF meter started to go haywire.
You're listening to the number one source for paranormal evidence brought to you firsthand by real investigators in the field. No hoaxes, no disinformation. You're listening to The Ghost Project.
I found myself face to face with someone or something that was attempting to play with my psyche as well as my physical being.
How sure are you of that?
I'm 100% sure of that.
Hey, we're back to Ghostly Talk, sponsored by Joey's Ectoplasm Cleaners. You barf it, we scarf it.
Told you I'd make a liner out of that.
It's good. I like it.
Joey's Ectoplasm Cleaners.
Dave Brockie's never short for any content for this show, as you heard last week. And I said that last week when we had him out. He's like, I got a commercial for you guys. And he nailed that thing. And I said, okay, I'll isolate it. We'll use it. So there we go. Congratulations, Dave. Thank you.
In the last half hour, we set it up. We learned about the Fed and the essentially,
just the foundation, what we're talking about.
The fraud. Misinformation, the fraud that we live with every day, thinking the Fred is, or the Fred. Who's Fred?
The Fed is a fraud.
The Fed is acting.
I run the economy.
No, the Fed is acting in your best interest. It's not. It's a business. Yeah. It's a business.
They're not a government agency that's there to operate, you know, from what I understand, to operate.
It's a for-profit business.
They're out to make a profit.
We set that up, and one of the things they're interested in doing is forming this cashless society. We're going to learn about that. The website is www.colonialresources.com, and the guest back again on Ghostly Talk is Michael Trudeau. It's just scaring me. I'm shaking in my boots.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the first time I really started hammering on this thing was I had my own program, as you mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
and getting ready for the show, going through news tidbits one day, I stumble onto this little tidbit about a RFID microchip that had been placed inside of Infinity lipstick tubes and sold through Walmart in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. We heard about that.
So, you know, it's one of those things where you sit back and you go, huh. That sticks out. I don't even know where to go with that statement. That little sentence, you could have gone in 50 different directions if it was Saturday Night Live. But I thought to myself, this has got to be interesting as to why you would want to track lipstick around town, so let's find out what the deal is. And I started delving and doing some research, and I found out that Walmart had been involved in tagging a lot of their products, and had planned on going 100% RFID through their systems within a couple of years. And I thought, boy, there's something to this. So I got on, you know, a little bit further into the research. And at the same time, I was on another pathway. And that was doing research as a monetary specialist. I'd come into the Omnibus Drug Smuggling Act and started researching this Know Your Customer rules and all that business and as to what might be on the sidebar there.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out not to be quite as innocuous as they perpetrated, which is, hey, we're trying to stop money launderers and drug smugglers and counterfeiters. And they eventually got to what we're going to have to do.
Because that's the first thing they buy, Michael, is lipstick.
Yeah, isn't that square?
Yeah.
And so they start off with we got to stop these counterfeiters, so we're going to change the currency, physically change the currency, put some security features on it, some micro prints, some water marks, and so on. And they did that, the metal strip and the currency,
yeah.
You hold it up and see it now.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that. And, of course, you know, it's a great expense to the nation to revamp the entire currency supply, but obviously if the counterfeiters are there, we got to do, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So we move on, and apparently it didn't work. And how we know it didn't work is because they came out and said it didn't work, and now we've got to change the currency again, and now they're coming out with all the pretty colored bills.
Oh, God.
And you start to, you know, well wait a minute now. Okay, what's the scoop here? You've revamped the nation's currency supply twice within a 10-year period of time with the guise of we've got to catch these nasty, evil-doing counterfeiters.
Mm-hmm.
And in all this time, here we are sometime later, I'm looking at this going, how come I haven't seen any counterfeiters paraded across the nightly news screen yet? Instead, it's always, oh, we caught a couple of college kids printing bogus 20s on the school printer buying beer.
Yeah.
Not, you know, major counterfeiting rings that would, you know, I guess, justify changing the nation's currency supply twice in a decade.
It has so been a long time since I had a nice counterfeiting ring.
So I start wondering, what's going on? You know, why the song and dance here and changing all the currencies around? And, of course, it comes down to there's always a reason for it. They're certainly not doing it because they want to, you know, put artists to work with new designs for currency. And what it really came down to is these guys are conditioning us into believing that this is a problem that's so severe that they're going to have to take currency out of it altogether in physical form and make it electronic.
Yeah.
And, you know, once I started to do the research on that, bang, I start to connect up with the RFID microchip business of everything being microchipped to move it around the country and be able to track it. So you could stock it, I guess, and, you know, when it's running out at Walmart, we've got the truck at Walmart in the back loading it back up again.
Uh-huh.
It looks all like, well, this could all be, you know, a pretty functional thing, and it looks like they're doing the right thing for all the right reasons until you connect all the dots and realize, wait a minute, that's not what's going on at all here. These guys are taking cash out of the system for a very nefarious reason, and that is so they can track every single purchase that we make and be in control of it 100%. And when I started hitting the circuit with that, which was in 2005, doing You Guys Show, I did Coast to Coast, bunches of shows, and said, this is the deal. They're coming up, they're testing these smart cards, these RFID microchip smart cards in small hamlets outside of this country right now. Mm-hmm. And they're offering the little citizens of the Hamlet X, here's the deal, you use this card instead of money, and we're going to give you a 20% off on all your purchases, or 10% off on all your purchases. So, of course, everybody signed right up on board.
Yeah.
And they're working out the glitches. And I said they're going to have this system in place within 2 years' time. Just judging by how fast they were progressing, I figured we had about 2 years. A year later, they announced the Chase Blink card was being released up in New York City. And it was going to be released to 750,000 New Yorkers and an equal pile of Philadelphians. And that's how it was to begin. And then since then, we've seen the Chase MasterCard, MasterCard PayPass, rather. Visa's got their version. Everybody's coming out with these new RFID smart cards now. And how you know this, of course, is by seeing the television commercials. They show you where, I think the first one I caught was a marathon runner in New York, and he's running along, and he runs in and gets a bunch of drinks and so on, and runs right back out without missing his spot in the marathon, simply by waving his card by the monitor. That was the very first commercial I saw, but I've seen bunches since then. And the one thing that we're really moving into now, not just that see this thing exists, that was the first round, but now we're moving into the conditioning phase of, now if you're not using this, you are a scourge on the rest of us.
Michael, I have said the same thing to you, Doug. I don't know if I said it on the air here.
But I
have been noticing this, and I said this 10 years ago. 10 years ago, the tables were turned. You remember this? If you were in line at the grocery store, right? You got your checkbook, you got your cash, right? This is 10 years ago at least, right? It's not that long ago, but long enough. And there'd always be that one person that pulled out their credit card, right?
Yep.
And you go, oh Jesus, this guy's got to run his. Now, of course, back then they were not dial up, so it would take forever to run.
Right.
You know, but you're like, oh God, this guy's going to spend all day long.
Why couldn't take half an hour?
Why couldn't he just write a check like a normal person would? You know what's going on now? Now I have watched in a decade that completely turn around. I saw another commercial, Michael. I'll go back and forth with you on this. My favorite one is that you have like the conveyor thing, the consumer conveyor belt going,
yeah,
right?
I saw
walking
that
through
one.
Line. Look how efficient we are. We're efficient little consumers that can go back and forth, back and forth. Yeah, I'm pulling at Doug and making everything move. I'm sorry. but you know, we're efficient consumers. We make everything, and we're moving right down
and
the
then
line.
All
right?
Of a sudden,
somebody pulls a check out.
or a $20 bill.
Oh,
and then
my God.
It's like a big.
I also
sky is falling.
It makes things less brighter, too.
Exactly. That's the key, and that's what I was just going to say, because, again, I mentioned my mom's in the psychology field, so that's one of the things I've got a lot of experience in is that, and it's something that I caught right away, which is this conditioning is not just innocuous marketing here.
It is propaganda,
this is
straight
serious
up.
Psychological conditioning when they show, and you hit it, which is the music's all wonderful and light and happy, and everything's colorful, and everybody's smiling, and they've got wonderful clothing and bonnets on, and they're all doing their business at the flower shop, and then all of a sudden out comes, like you mentioned, the $20 bill, and bang, black and white. They go right down to the music getting slower and slower or turning icky, and then the next thing, everybody's got scowls on their faces, and they're looking at you like, see what you did? And man, I'm telling you now, that even if that doesn't happen to you when you walk into the store and pull out that cash, the subconscious has picked that up and it's burned it in. And now you're walking through there and you get an uneasy feeling about every part of that transaction, unless you're doing it the easy way with the card like everybody else was doing.
Well, no, they what they do now, still, in order to track you, and this is another thing everybody knows, the people in this studio know how cranky I get when I go to a place.
Oh, I do too.
And I go to a place and I pull out cash out of my American money, out of my wallet to buy a product, and they go, can I get your name, please, and your address? Why the hell do you need that information from me?
Right. What are you writing a book?
It's cash! It's cash! Check it out. Put it under the light. Get the strip.
Right.
Fine, whatever.
And, you know, this is coming to a point very soon now where the last step will be, gee, it ain't working. We couldn't get this thing covered, boys, so here's what's happening. Iran is flooding America with currency that they're making over there in Iran, and it's bogus, and boy, they're wiping us out economically, and look at how bad things are economically now. We can't have it, so here's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, America as a society is going to be right on board with it, man. They're not going to back down and argue one bit. They're going to go, well, we can't let Iran do that.
Yeah, well, of course. And the patriotism comes in, and, mm-hmm. you know, we all want to look out for ourselves and our country. So that's the conditioning on that, too. Not that I don't
right.
love
they'll
this
tell
country.
Tell us that the terrorist act that is unlike the New York buildings that went down, they'll say this one is much more subtle but much more severe.
Mm-hmm.
The currency coming in. So at that point, they're going to announce we're going to have to go cashless. And they've already got the systems completely set up for it. You can go into any store you want to anywhere in America, and they've got systems set up to use card-only monitors. They are RFID readers that they'll just scan your card, bing, pull the money right out of your account, bing, put it right into the account of the seller, and it's a done deal.
Yeah.
It's worse because one of the things, and I don't know if I covered this the last time we were with you guys, but there is, and here comes the paranormal for you. But they patented back in 1999, the United States Patent Office, and you can go into Google and check this out.
Yeah.
They patented a barcode tattoo. So if you want to go to Google, just type in barcode tattoo, and the rest will be done for you. It's going to take you right to the U.S. patent site. It'll give you the patent number, which is 578 million something. But 578 is what sticks in my mind as far as the first numbers for it. And it's going to tell you, and the verbiage is very exact, it says, a barcode tattoo that will be placed on the back of your right hand and used to consummate a sale, deducting the amount from the buyer or from the buyer's account and depositing it into the seller's account.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that, because it's a barcode tattoo, not just any marker tattoo, but a barcode, you will be able to use with the same exact system that they've got in place in every store right now. And that has already been patented. So, again, when we talk about the stuff that gets out there on the fringe a little bit and people go, oh, come on, you're talking, hey, go there. Look it up yourself. This is all easy for me to say this stuff, but you can go, because of the wonderful existence of the Internet, you can go to Google and educate yourself. You can type in the questions, who owns the Fed? You can type in barcode tattoo. Those two will really get it going for you, but I'll give you a really fun one if you want to spend some time late at night not being able to sleep, and that's type in this executive order number. The number is 11,110. That's the executive order that Kennedy signed 40 years ago that cost him his life.
Wow.
Executive order 11,110.
JFK.
And that's the executive order that he signed that put the Federal Reserve out of business.
The executive order allows the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury to issue $4.29 billion in silver certificates against silver bullion based on authority delegated by the President to the Secretary under the Thomas Amendment to the Agricultural Adjustment Act. Well, that made me lost, because that's Wikipedia.
Well, you're exactly right. What he did was he took the power from the Federal Reserve to create money in America and loan it to the government and its citizens at interest and put it back in the Treasury based on the amount of gold and silver held there, as was stated in the Constitution. But the problem was, at that time, there were 300 members in the Federal Reserve, and they were splitting between themselves annually, under the table, tax-free, $1 trillion. And those are, you think about the math here, 1960s dollars.
Yeah.
$1 trillion split between 300 people every year. And he took that from them, and 5 months later, he was shot dead in Dallas. And without another executive order, those silver certificates you just mentioned went out of circulation, and Federal Reserve notes came right back in like nothing had ever happened.
Yeah.
Hence another nail in the coffin for JFK.
So I mean, I'll tell you, again, this is it's easy for me to say all this. I could be making it all up, but the research I've done is very simple. It shows it, and everybody can do the same research. You just have to know what path to be on, and it takes a while to do that, as you guys, of course, are, as researchers yourself, certainly know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of saying, hey, for yourselves, for all the listeners out there, go right onto Google and type in or Yahoo, who owns the Fed, barcode tattoo, and Executive Order 11,110, and do the research for yourselves. And then after that, you can start realizing how bad it is and start to begin with, hey, what do I do about this?
Yeah.
I don't think we can take down, you know, an organization as big as this because it's pretty big, it's global. We're moving into a global depression that's going to last probably 8 to 10 years before we see any positive sustained growth again. And that's because they've worked this out so that they could step in, take our wealth again, take the property, and it's a cyclical thing. They can't just continually move forward upward. They just continually up and down, up and down. That's why Jefferson said first by inflation, then deflation, then inflation, then deflation.
Yep.
And they simply keep that ebb and flow going.
Well, yeah, it keeps you in a constant state of paranoia, too, it sounds
sure.
like. I mean, and believe me, I think there's no people that in this room that know that feeling. I mean, we're all... I think everybody's feeling that now. I mean,
well, and I'll tell you, you can see where the money's going to go, how they're going to get their money. We had this massive meltdown, and everybody's houses went bye-bye. All the stock markets died. Everybody lost their portfolios, their IRAs, their 401ks. Everybody got wiped out, down 40 to 70%, depending on who you're going to talk to in a day.
Yep.
And then, oh, we've got to fix it, so here comes our stimulus package. Well, what is it? Well, we're going to create money so we can fix this. We've got to get these banks loaning money again. So what will we do?
Yeah.
$7.4 trillion infusion. And mark my words on this, as that $7.4 trillion begins to work in this economy now, that bailout package you heard of, which was the $700 billion, that's nothing. This is $7.4 trillion when it's over.
Yeah.
That is going to absolutely devastate the currency's buying power. So that last little bit is where they're going to kick us and say, hey, currency's dead. It's being created in Iran and flooded into America. We're going cashless. And at that point, folks are going to either be forced into every single transaction being tracked by the government or going underground with a lot of the transactions they do and doing it barter style like we used to.
Yeah.
We'll have to.
So Ghostly Talk runs.
Barter. Yeah,
barter everything.
Well, you
here.
See it, and it's everywhere. You see it all the time anywhere, but anyway, but now as this slides into this, you know,
more
I guess, deepening depression, we're seeing it much more prevalent. We're starting to see articles being written about it.
Mm-hmm. And you're saying depression also.
It's no
not
question.
Recession.
This will be.
Not
well,
recession.
You can, now, the difference is because you've got inflation or you've got deflation. And if we're moving into a depression, you'll see a deflationary spiral, and that's what we're seeing now. As everybody gets laid off, they can't afford to buy things. And, of course, as they can't buy things, the people that manufacture them have to bring the prices on them down so that what few they do sell, they make less money on, and they have to lay off more people, and they can't buy things, and it begins to feed on itself.
Mm-hmm.
So as that happens, everything has to come down in price, and no one can make any money off of anything that they have, and we're seeing it now. Go and take a look at what a TV set is today compared to what it was 2 years ago, and you'll be floored.
Because,
of course, the price is right, and that's happening because we're moving into this deflationary spiral caused by this unemployment, and that's going to continue to get worse. That's why I said you'll see that double-digit employment. Believe me, it's right around the corner, and that, of course, exacerbates this problem and keeps it rolling, and these guys just keep making it and keep making it and keep making it. The only way you can protect yourself now is to take whatever wealth you've got and protect it in some form of a hard asset, whether it be gold, silver, something like land, something that's tangible, that can't be taken, that is really going to hold its value. If you look backwards to what happened starting when this all began, roughly about when we got hit in 2001, the World Trade Center attack, you can look from that point forward and say that gold on average has risen 30% every single year since.
Do you think that that was what started this whole... Well, probably that's a dumb question, I guess, as far as 9/11 is concerned. I mean, this was catastrophic, we know. It was the most insane thing I know I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Surely.
And we've talked to a lot of people on this show about the effect that that particular incident had. And, I mean, I think it's, no doubt in my mind, strange things are going on this planet, whether they're with the government or whether they're with, you know, the otherworldly things that happen. It's how they're related. And I'm sure...
Well, you're right.
Yeah.
And then one thing I've always said is this. Listen, if the event is accurate, okay, so in other words, the World Trade Centers really did come down and 3,000 people died, we know that part.
Yeah.
The economy's really crashing like this and so on. Well, who's really pulling the strings and all and so on? We can sit and debate because, of course, I've done the same thing with all the guys who have got their various conspiracies, and I've got my own. My own beliefs there. But the point being is that we're going to debate this part back and forth, but the fact is the 3,000 people still died. So you want to debate that stuff after the fact, not during while it's going on. Right now, while it's going on, you'd rather evacuate the 3,000 people out of the building as fast as you can before the thing actually comes down.
Absolutely.
So for me, it's the same thing. I'm trying to evacuate as many people out of that system as humanly possible before that system comes crashing down and it's too late to get out of the building.
And it's really interesting because you're saying, and I believe this,
gold.
Because my grandmother said that. My father said that.
Yeah.
Everybody tells me, you want to buy gold and silver.
The track record is infallible. It's got a 5,000-year track record of being able to maintain its buying power. So getting back to the conspiracy part, let's assume that's what it is, and what I'm telling you is correct, that there's an evil empire at work here. Well, that empire will eventually die like every other empire on this planet has. For instance, the Romans are no longer in charge, but
right.
We're still spending their gold coins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of if you're going to transfer wealth from one regime or one empire to the next, you can only do it by doing it with gold because they'll confiscate the land. They can take the land and say, now it's owned by King so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
And they might say the same thing about gold, but the difference is that, man, I can hide my gold. It's going to be pretty tough to hide that land.
Well, that
right,
and
right.
Well, even property, they'll confiscate property too. I mean,
and you can't hide it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not land property, but like, you know, your house, obviously.
They oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But at least if I can take my gold and get away, I've got my value. I've got my wealth with me.
Yeah,
where
you're
whatever country you go to, the gold is worth.
Well,
more.
And irrelevant to that, it's transferable globally. So, for instance, if we look at the price of gold today, at close to whatever it is, must be 900 now, or darn close to it, closed at 900 on Friday,
mm-hmm.
is you've got the same gold that's selling over in England at $1,100 in their currency.
Right.
And the difference is the currency separation, but the buying power of the gold is identical. I can take my gold, go over to England, buy the same quality suit that I can here for now. And that's the aspect that will always transfer from one place to the next and through time. That ounce of gold today, which is a $20 gold piece, a one-ounce gold piece, back in the 1800s, bought you $20 in merchandise. Well, that was a good quality suit of clothing for $20.
Oh, yeah.
Today, that ounce of gold for $900 will still buy me the suit of clothing. A $20 bill back then would have done the same thing. Today, it won't. So it's that aspect of losing
absolutely.
The buying power being stolen, and they can't take it from the gold.
They can't take it from
so
gold.
So that's why you use that. Or to barter with it. I mean, you know, trade it back and forth. If nobody will accept a paper dollar anymore from you for goods and services,
they'll
you better
right.
have something else that they need.
Yeah.
Or you better have another medium of exchange that's readily acceptable, like gold or silver.
Exactly. Unfortunately, God.
We are
we talk about this.
And you know, somebody's listening because I hear commercials now all the time. People want to buy your gold.
Oh,
cash
yeah.
now for gold.
Cash
so
now for
someone,
gold. Bring in your jewelry. Bring in your wedding
well,
band.
You,
bring
that stuff is becoming fought after now because it's really in short supply. All of the mints are suspending sales. The governments do not want to let it go. I'll tell you what, guys, if I can, I'm going to offer an article that I wrote on barter economics and the coming cashless society.
Sure.
If anybody wants it for free, they can call, and we'll send it to them. The number to call is 800.
Mm-hmm.
042.
You know what, Michael? You dropped out. You dropped out.
Sorry?
For a second. What was the number again?
It's 1-800-685-4042.
Perfect.
Excellent. Check that out. Call into that if you want this article.
And we'll just send it out to anybody who wants it for free. No, nobody's going to call you and hassle you about nothing to buy anything or anything like that. Just educate yourselves the best way you can. I've written some stuff that I can send you guys free of charge. We'll help that way.
Thank you, Michael.
Wow, thank you, Michael.
Hang on the line. Don't leave us just
sure.
yet. Hang tight for one second.
The website is www.colonialresources.com. That was Michael.
Man.
The Cashless Society, the Fed, the...
we didn't talk about ghost stories here, but this show's more
we
than
need,
that.
Yeah. We need people to think and think on their own, and Michael is saying, you know, you can read these things, you can
and
look
I,
at them,
and we've watched
Google
since 2005. Go back to 2005. Folks.
Listen to the archive
of that, and this... Man, it's
I
got
to thank Michael Trudeau. I have to thank Tony Saletti of aparanormalhistory.com for coming on the show as well. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening and putting up with us for the past 3 hours. Of course, next week, remember...
We're going into February. Yeah, no show next week.
Next week is Super Bowl Sunday. Everybody have a great...
I'm proud to say that we are officially piercing into our eighth year of broadcasting. Also.
Starting next week.
News coming up on... Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you were out, Michael. Sorry. Michael said congratulations. Thank you, though, Michael. And, yeah, man, we'll let you know about all the details on that. I don't know what we're going to do just yet.
So, until 2 weeks from now, thank everybody and have a great Super Bowl Sunday next week. This has been Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll see you guys in a couple weeks.
Ghostly Talk!
You have been listening to Ghostly Talk Paranormal Talk Radio. The Ghostly Talk audio program is distributed for free under the Open Content License. Please share with all your friends and support independent media.